Okay, so today we're continuing our series on Talmud Torah. We started last week. We spoke about a little bit about Talmud Torah. Today we're going to talk a little bit more about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. It's a three-part series, so each topic, each week is going to be a totally different element of Talmud Torah. To be quite honest, I do not even remember what my topic was last week, what we spoke about last week. There have been quite a few shiurim between then and now, but I'm pretty confident that I did not speak about this topic. What we're going to talk about today is Talmud Torah specifically as it relates to women. Now, it used to be that when you would talk about Talmud Torah for women, it would be a controversial topic. I don't believe that it is any longer a controversial topic, because I think no matter what camp you're in, no matter where you come from, you pretty much have your mahalich, have our way of each group within the Jewish people sort of has their way of doing things. And it's been well established enough over the past several decades that we do what we do, and it's not really something that's even a source of tremendous debate, at least in very recent times. But it is a fascinating study in terms of the sugya, in terms of how the halacha developed, how so many divergent practices developed over times. Meaning, if you read some of the literature from the Hasidic sects in terms of the limitations that they place on Talmud Torah for women, and then you read what comes out of our yeshiva, it's almost it's min hakotze el hakotze, from one extreme to another extreme. And how does that happen? How does that happen within one Torah? So in a certain sense, this really helps us understand how Torah develops, how halacha develops, and how we can have such a concept of various minhagim and piskei halacha, really, not just minhagim, but piskei halacha that are so divergent from each other, and yet we view them all as part of the tradition of the Jewish people and as part of a legitimate tradition of Klal Yisrael's. That's what I would like to try to do, to try to just take a look at this halacha, where it started and how it gets developed through the generations, or at least in brief form, because we are committed to finishing by 12:30. Now, in order to frame the question of Talmud Torah for women, we have to realize that it's not really a question, it is several questions, meaning to the extent that there is a question, it's more than one question. You have to ask the question, what, if anything, are women obligated to learn? Because that's certainly, we first have to figure out what there's an absolute obligation to do, because that everyone that's not going to be left to debate. That's not going to be left to that's not going to be up for any discussion. So first we have to figure out what women are obligated to learn, and of those things that they must learn, is it a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah as we know it? Or is it the fulfillment of some other mitzvah? Meaning it's possible that there's an obligation for women to learn certain sections of the Torah, and the man can learn those very same sections of the Torah, and that they're in fulfillment of two different mitzvahs. It's at least a logical possibility that for a man it's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, and for a woman it's a fulfillment of some other mitzvah. So we have to figure out first what women are obligated to learn. Within that, even knowing that they're obligated to learn certain things, is that a part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, or is it some other requirements, some other mitzvah? The second question that could be formulated within this topic is, if a woman wants to learn more than she is obligated to learn, may she do so? Is it a mitzvah to do so? Is it a prohibition to do so? Is it something, generally speaking, women are exempt from time-bound positive mitzvahs. Talmud Torah is certainly not that. Talmud Torah is not time-bound. Talmud Torah is it's day and night, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, 354 days a year in the lunar calendar. It's something that is a constant mitzvah, but we can use time-bound positive mitzvahs maybe as a model in a certain sense. Normally, when a woman is pater from time-bound positive mitzvahs, the six that women are actually pater from, there are more exceptions than there are the rule. Most of the time-bound positive mitzvahs women are in fact obligated to do, like Kiddush and Matzah, but there are are certain time-bound positive mitzvos that women are actually exempt from. Are they allowed to volunteer those mitzvos? Well, certainly, everyone agrees. There's no debate that women are permitted and even encouraged, certainly encouraged, to volunteer time-bound positive mitzvos. There is some debate as to whether women should recite a bracha when they volunteer a time-bound positive mitzvah. Should a woman recite a bracha on sitting in sukkah? Should a woman recite a bracha on taking lulav? So that's a machlokas between Svardin and Ashkenazim, between the Rambam and the Balei HaTosfos. So is Talmud Torah the same? Do we look at Talmud Torah and say, well, even if a woman's not obligated, but it's always best when a person volunteers a mitzvah, so maybe a woman, or do we say, no, it's not always best that a person volunteers a mitzvah. It's usually best. But let's say if I wanted to volunteer to perform the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim, that would be a real problem. I'm not permitted to volunteer the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim. I guess a little bit of background information is necessary. I'm not a Kohen, right? Otherwise, that comment didn't make any sense. As a non-Kohen, I am certainly not permitted to volunteer the mitzvah of Birchas Kohanim. So would Talmud Torah fit into that category? And then a third way to formulate the issue is, forget about what a woman is obligated to do, what a woman may want to do. What about setting up educational institutions? What about setting up a Beis Yaakov, a Stern College, a day school? How do we set up an educational framework that takes into account the obligations that exist, as well as the opportunities that may exist, without creating a sense of obligation where there isn't, and without robbing people of opportunities that are positive opportunities? So that's the most complicated of the three questions. That there's no doubt is by far the most complicated of the three questions, and that's the only one that's still somewhat open-ended, meaning that's the one that people are, you know, as I mentioned at the outset, the other questions people have sort of found their camp, and they've figured out which hashkafa they're comfortable with, and they do what they do in the and we're each following a tradition, from Satmar to Soloveitchik, we're all following a tradition that is very much in line with what our overall traditions are. Setting up educational institutions, that's still something that is debated even within our community and certainly within other communities as well. Someone just posted on the, not in the chat, to me privately, with regards to the second question, if a woman volunteers a mitzvah, does that mean they also volunteer the Isra of Bittul Torah? So to volunteer prohibition, we never have, meaning that doesn't exist. Meaning, let's say, again, using the background that I am not a Kohen, if I say that I don't ever want to go to a cemetery, so I'm going to volunteer the prohibition of Tumas Meis, that I'm not going to be metame to a dead body. So that doesn't make any sense. To volunteer a prohibition where there is no prohibition, that's something that we don't find any precedent for. So meaning there's a concept in Shas and Poskim called Eino Mitzuva V'Osa, but there's no Eino Mitzuva V'Eino Osa, right? Eino Mitzuva, and you do it even though you're not obligated to do it. This comes up in the discussion of the, if I can go a little bit far afield over here, there's a major discussion about the mitzvah of chinuch, of being mechanech our children. So the question is, to what extent, or what are the mechanics of the mitzvah of chinuch? Is it that the child themselves becomes obligated in the mitzvah on a derabbanan level? Or is it that the parent is obligated to be mechanech the child? This seems to be a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos in Seches Brachos. Now, those who suggest that the child becomes obligated in the mitzvah raise a very important question, or a very fundamental question. If the child becomes obligated in the mitzvah, the question becomes, what is the nature of that obligation? So some of the Achronim want to suggest, they become an Eino Mitzuva V'Yosa, meaning just like a woman in a mitzvah Shazman Grama is volunteering a mitzvah, the Rabbanan imposed that the child is obligated to volunteer the mitzvah. Obligated to volunteer sounds a little bit funny. It's like, you know, in I had a college guidance meeting with one of my children, and the college guidance counselor said, "Did you meet all of your required chesed hours?" So like, it sounds a little bit funny, right? Required chesed, is it really chesed if it's required? So I guess, you know, it's but that is one model that we look at the mitzvah of chinuch with, that there's like this voluntary, this obligation to volunteer the mitzvah. So some of the acharim struggle. If that's really what it is, then why is a child not allowed to eat non-kosher or violate any, or wear shatnas or violate any of the mitzvahs lo saseh? There's no volunteering mitzvahs lo saseh. So that's why the mechanics of the mitzvah of chinuch are difficult to figure out, because that's like a base, a basis of the discussion. That's one of the givens in the discussion, is that it doesn't really make sense to volunteer a lo saseh, to volunteer a prohibition, but to volunteer a mitzvah certainly does make sense. So let's start at the beginning. The beginning is the Gemara itself. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Kiddushin that a father is obligated to teach his child Torah. The Gemara says, how do I know that? Because it's a pasuk. They should teach your children Torah. So says the Gemara, and if the child was not taught by his father, he still has to learn Torah himself. So asks the Gemara, does a mother have to teach her son Torah as well? The Gemara says no, because we darshan the pasuk, v'limaditem and v'lamaditem. Only those who are obligated in learning Torah are obligated in the mitzvah to teach Torah. But one who is not obligated in the mitzvah to learn Torah is not obligated in the mitzvah of teaching Torah. So says the Gemara, well, wait, you're making a major assumption. You're making an assumption that a woman is not obligated to learn Torah. How do you know that she's not obligated to learn Torah? How do I know that a woman has no obligation to learn Torah? So the Gemara says, v'limadtem v'lamadtem. Kol sha'achirim mitzuvin l'lamdo, mitzuvin l'lamid es atzmo. Only someone who, as a child, had someone else who was obligated to teach them is obligated to pass that forward to the next generation. Someone who never had anyone obligated to teach them doesn't have to pass that on to the next generation, does not have to teach Torah to others. Says the Gemara, how do I know that a father does not have to teach a daughter Torah? The Torah says explicitly, Bineichem. Bineichem means sons. So we darshan Bineichem v'lo b'noseichem, and not daughters. That the obligation of chinuch may certainly apply to a daughter, but the obligation specifically of teaching Torah, of being melamed Torah, applies to a son and not to a daughter. All that Gemara tells us is that a woman is not obligated in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah from a Talmud Torah perspective, meaning it could be that there are other reasons why a woman has to learn, but from that Gemara, from the very outset, we see that a woman is not obligated in Talmud Torah. Then there's another sugya in Maseches Sota. And the Gemara Maseches Sota is an unusual context. The Gemara is talking about a woman who is accused, and more than accused, but has given reason for people to believe that she's been behaving inappropriately in her marriage, or more accurately, outside the context of her marriage. And as a result of that, she has to go through a series of exercises that are either going to make it very obvious that she is in fact guilty, or are going to clear her of all charges. And as part of the special drink that she has to have, that's going to determine whether she is guilty or innocent, the Mishnah tells us that sometimes a woman may have a special zuchus that's going to save her from the punishment that would otherwise be forthcoming in very short order. So the Gemara says that the Gemara talks about the possibility of the zuchus of Torah being something that will delay the woman's punishment. So it says the Gemara, the zuchus of Torah, ha'ena mitzvah. She's not obligated to learn Torah. How could that be her greatest zuchus? So says the Gemara, el zuchus de mitzvah. You're right. It can't be that it's the zuchus of Torah. It must be the zuchus of a mitzvah. So says the Gemara, but Torah has a unique capacity to save in a way that other mitzvahs do not. So So it can't be that it's only the zuchus of another mitzvah. The zuchus of another mitzvah doesn't have that, for lack of a better term, sgula, to have the capacity to save a person in a time like that where their life is in danger. Only Torah has that special zuchus. So how could it not be the zuchus of Torah? But on the other hand, how could it be the zuchus of Torah? Women are not obligated in learning Torah. So the Gemara answers, yeah, they may not be obligated in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, but nevertheless, they certainly have the zuchus of Torah. How do they have the zuchus of Torah? Because in the zuchus of encouraging their husbands and their children, for each woman, their husband and their children to learn Torah, so that is going to be the ultimate zuchus of Torah, and their zuchus is very great. It's a full zuchus of Torah, but it's not in the actual Talmud Torah. It's not in the actual learning of the Torah. It's in the facilitating the learning of the Torah. So it's fascinating. That Gemara actually shows us two things. One thing that Gemara says is the Gemara did not immediately reject the fact that women have a zuchus of Torah by saying that it's usher, that it's usher for women to learn Torah, so they can't possibly have it. No, what the Gemara said was ha'ena mitzuva v'yosehi, that it's not obligatory. Ena mitzuva v'yosehi is the term we use to describe a woman taking lulav, to describe a woman sitting in sukkah, which are certainly things that everybody encourages. And that's something that's certainly a fulfillment of a mitzvah. But it's a fulfillment of a mitzvah, but it's not a fulfillment of a mitzvah on the same level that a mitzvah v'yosa is. Meaning certainly when someone is commanded to do a mitzvah, there is greater reward for doing a mitzvah that one is commanded in than there is for doing a mitzvah that one is not commanded in. I remember this was the topic of my bar mitzvah drasha. I did not write it. Someone wrote it for me, but this was the topic. The topic was, why am I so happy about becoming a bar mitzvah? Prior to bar mitzvah, I was in a mitzvah v'yosa. I remember the line that the person had me read was that, because my father is an accountant, so I said I had only credits and no debits. I was only a fulfillment of mitzvahs and didn't get, and was not faulted for failure in any in performance of any mitzvahs. And yet, now that I'm obligated, I'm going to be subject to punishment for failing to do mitzvahs. Why is that a source of joy? It would seem to be a disappointing transition. And the Gemara tells us that Gadol HaMitzvah V'Yoseh Yoseh Mishein HaMitzvah V'Yoseh, that it's greater, the schar is greater for one who's commanded and does a mitzvah. It's an interesting question. Why? I mean, you would think that if you volunteer a mitzvah, it would be much, much greater than something that that you're obligated to do and you do out of a sense of obligation. And, you know, there are a lot of answers given in Rishonim. Tosfos talks about the pressure that one has when they're obligated, and maybe just having that pressure, knowing that you have to get it done, builds up the schar, because lefum tzara agra, based on how much struggle one has to go through, the reward is going to be greater. Or it also suggests maybe not even the pressure of doing the mitzvah, maybe the yetzer hara works harder when you are mitzvah, when you're commanded, so you have more to overcome. It's much easier to do something when you don't have the Yetzer Hara in your way. You got to get the Yetzer Hara out of the way. So maybe that's why God was. I was just reading the biography of the Kleisenberger Rebbe, and because he was the Rebbe of one of my Rebbeim, Rav Asher Weiss, and he was a fascinating figure during the Holocaust and the aftermath of the Holocaust. A burning person. He lost everything. Lost a wife and 11 children. 11 children in the Holocaust, and then rebuilt a whole Hasidus in America, in Israel. Really fascinating person. But one of the things that he said, he was a genius from a very young age, and they asked him, how did he become such a great Talmud Chacham? And he said he used to trick his Yetzer Hara. He had a great trick that he would play on his Yetzer Hara to get the Yetzer Hara out of the way. So they said, what's the trick? How do you trick the Yetzer Hara? He said, all the other boys in his cheder wanted to become Gedolim. They wanted to become great Talmidei Chacham. So the Yetzer Hara would focus on them because they wanted to accomplish great things. He said all he ever intended to accomplish was to have a good day of learning. That day would be a good day. He said, what does Yetzer Hara have to start up with me? All I wanted was one day. And then the next day, all I wanted was one day. So the Yetzer Hara was too busy with the the other Talmidim, because they were interested in becoming Gedolim, what is he going to bother me for? All I'm interested is in one day of learning. A powerful lesson in terms of what one can accomplish if you focus on one day at a time. But that's another suggestion that the Balei HaTosfos have as to why an Eino Mitzvah V'Yosa is not as great as a Mitzvah V'Yosa. The answer that always resonated most with me, though, is the answer of the Ritva. The Ritva suggests, you know why you get greater schar for doing a mitzvah that you're commanded in doing? Because if Hashem commanded you to do it, it probably means he wants you to do it. And that's why you get greater reward for it. If Hashem didn't command you to do something, he may be happy when you do it, but he obviously doesn't want it as badly as the person that he commanded to do it. It's like if I see that one of my children is slacking off and hasn't done anything all day and has just been, you know, sitting in front of a screen all day. So I may say, you know what, go to the store and get me this. Go down the block and, you know, pick this up. And that. So one of the other kids might say, I'll do it. Halavai. They might say, I'll do it. But and I'm okay with that. It's okay to volunteer that you'll do it. But I really wanted the other person. There was a reason that I asked that child to do it. So that's how the Ritva explains why a mitzvah v'yosa in general gets greater reward than an eino mitzvah v'yosa. But the first thing that emerges from this Gemara in Sota is that we refer to a woman, Talmud Torah, as an eino mitzvah v'yosa. But then the Gemara in Sota gets a little bit more, a little bit stronger in its negativity toward toward women learning Torah. It's not abundantly clear which sections of Torah it's talking about. From the Gemara itself, it's not abundantly clear, but the Gemara is a discussion whether it's a good idea or a bad idea for one to teach his daughter Torah. And the Gemara has this famous line that Kalamilani is bita Torah ki ilu limda tiflus, that if a person teaches daughter Torah, it's like teaching her a certain sense of immorality, because the sharpness of the Torah and the ability to think in the Torah's way of thinking can be misused very easily and can be used to advance things that are not in line with a sense of Avodas Hashem and Yirah Shamayim. So that's what the Gemara says, it's ki'ilu limda tiflus. But the Gemara is not abundantly clear, like we said, which parts of Torah. So the Rambam, in Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Aleph, Halacha, Yud Gimel, the Rambam writes, Isha shalamda Torah, yesh l'schar. When a woman learns Torah, she gets rewarded. Avaleinu k'schar ish, just not the same reward that a man, because of mipnei shalom et staves, because she's not commanded. V'kala oz t'davar sheinu mitzuva lav la'salsa, anytime you have someone who's not obligated in a mitzvah and volunteers, like we just explained, the schar is not going to be the same. And nevertheless, says the Rambam, the afal pi sheyesh lo schar, divu chachamim shelo yilamin adam es bito Torah. Even though she will get schar, the chachamim told us, do not teach your daughter Torah. Mipnei sherov hanashim ein daitam mechuvanos l'islamid. Very fascinating line in the Rambam. The Rambam is walking this tightrope. He's telling us it's a wonderful thing. They get schar for learning Torah, but don't do it. What do you mean? I want to give my daughter all the greatest schar in the world. What do you mean? Don't do it? Because rov hanashim, your daughter might be great and she might be able to handle Torah better than anybody, but rov hanashim, most women, ain't daitam mechuvanos l'islami, are not, their intellect is not geared toward learning Torah. And he goes on to describe what Chazal say, that it's kilo lim v'tiflus. So what does that Rambam tell us? Now, what the Rambam seems to be opening a door to is the Rambam seems to be telling us that rov hanashim in some generation, and whether this is eternal or just an observation of Chazal in certain generations before education was something that people did for their daughters entirely at all. So rov hanashim were not able to learn Torah, but those who were more intellectually astute and those who were more trained intellectually, then certainly it's great schar. They get great reward for learning Torah. So that's how the Rambam expresses it. I'm just going to skip ahead a little bit, realizing that we only have 5 minutes left. As far as how this plays out in contemporary times, so there are certain, I was reading a biography once, I like reading rabbinic biographies, I was reading a biography once of the Satmar Rebbe, and they tell a story there that was so jarring for someone who comes from where the world that I come from, that like it was hard to believe the story. The story goes that the Satmar Rebbe heard a commotion outside his office. His wife was having an argument with one of his leading Hasidim. And he wanted to know, he said, what's going on over here? What's the argument? And the Chassid said that his daughter had a textbook from her Satmar girls' school. And it said something like, Ani Ohev Es Ha, whatever, something, even though that's what it said, Ani Ohev, it should be Ani Ohevet. But okay, it said that, some sentence in Hebrew. And the Chassid was complaining, look what they're doing. They're teaching our daughters Hebrew. They're teaching our daughters if you teach our daughters Hebrew, then the next thing they're going to do is they're going to want to learn Chumash, and then they're going to want to learn Rashi, and then they're going to want to learn Ramban, and who knows where that's going to lead to. So the Satmar Rebbe was saying that it's okay. They should understand at least what they're saying when they daven. There's nothing wrong with learning Hebrew. And it says that the Satmar Rebbe came out and he said, the Chassid is right. We have to take this out of the curriculum. What an foreign concept. That's so much further than where the Gemara went. But there are those that are much more limiting, and they say, well, if the Rambam says that Rov Nashim are not able to intellectually internalize the Torah in the proper way, then that's an eternal concept and it has to be applied universally for all time. Ramosha Feinstein didn't hold of Ramosha Feinstein in a tshuva in Yardei Chelikimelson Pezayin writes a tshuva to Rav Elias Svei, the late Rosh Yeshiva of the Philadelphia Yeshiva, where he also is very, very limited. He's very limiting in what he encourages for education of women. But the most famous expansion of Talmud Torah for women, of course, was the Beis Yaakov movement. And that was given the okay, not only by the Ger Rebbe, but probably even more famously by the Chafetz Chaim. And the Chafetz Chaim writes this in his commentary to Sota, in his Lukutei Halachos and Sota. And the Chafetz Chaim just observes that, why do you think the Rambam says that most women were unable to learn? Because most women were illiterate. Most women were never taught. They never went to school. Nowadays, he says the Chafetz Chaim, where women are literate and they know how to read, the language of whatever country they live in, and they read literature, how could it be that we're not going to teach them equivalent levels of intellectual rigor within Torah? So therefore, women should absolutely be learning Tanakh and Musrei Chazal, the Musar of Chazal. So came along Rav Soloveitchik years later, and without ever really publicly making a statement about this, just did. He just encouraged and taught. How, under what was the explanation of why he was able to do this? So in Rav Twersky's eulogy for Rav Soloveitchik, he explained it very beautifully. He said, Rav Soloveitchik never apologized for this. He never even felt that it needed explanation. He thought that it was obvious that expansion of Talmud Torah for women is the next logical step, because if the Chafetz Chaim is going to say that Torah has to offer the equivalent, at least, of what secular knowledge is offering women, in order that women should not, who are the bearers of our tradition, of our Mesorah, should not think that Torah is antiquated or Torah is unsophisticated and feel that they're not passing on anything of great value. A woman has to appreciate the beauty of Torah also. The concern was that someone who's very intellectually underdeveloped is not going to be able to understand Torah. But when women are getting college degrees and PhDs and are leading in every industry, then one would imagine that their minds are just as prepared for sophistication in Torah study. So I'm going to read you a quote from Rabbi Twersky's eulogy for Rav Soloveitchik. He writes, "The halacha prohibiting Torah study for women is not indiscriminate or all-encompassing. There is complete unanimity that women are obligated to study halachos pertaining to mitzvos, which are incumbent upon them." That's something the Rama writes explicitly, that certainly a woman is obligated in the mitzvah. She has to know how to do the mitzvahs. Of course she has to learn about that mitzvah. The Beis HaLevi writes, it's not a kiyum of Talmud Torah, it's a kiyum of the mitzvah to learn about the mitzvah. It's similar to what Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky writes to Nemes Yaakov, that when Yaakov Avinu spent 14 years studying in Shem Be'Eber, it was part of the Kiyum mitzvah of Kibbutz Avim, because his parents sent him to survive in Lavan's house. And the only way he was going to do that was by preparing himself for it. So forget about the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, preparing himself for that experience. So the Rav Tursky continues, the prohibition of teaching Torah Shebaal Peh to women relates to optional study. But if ever circumstances dictate that the study of Torah Shebaal Peh is necessary to provide a firm foundation for faith, such study becomes obligatory and obviously lies beyond the pale of any prohibition. Undoubtedly, the Rav's prescription was more far-reaching than that of the Chafetz Chaim and others, but the difference, and I think there's a critical line, but the difference in magnitude should not obscure their fundamental agreement. Meaning what he's suggesting is that Rav Soloveitchik didn't really make any chiddush over here. He didn't suggest anything new. The way it expresses itself is somewhat new, but because the world that we live in is a different world, but the idea is very fundamental, and that is that women are obligated to learn anything that is necessary to live a fully Torah observant lifestyle. That everyone agrees. Everyone agrees. Every Jew is supposed to be fully observant of Torah and mitzvahs. So certainly obligated to learn that. Chafetz Chaim came along and said that will now have to include more than basic halachos of how to perform the rituals, of how to perform the mitzvahs. Because women are literate and women are more educated, if they're going to find meaning in Judaism, the Torah has to provide that kind of intellectual rigor as well. And says Rav Soloveitchik, he didn't say anything, he didn't have to say, but it logically followed that once women are not only also somewhat literate, but are accomplished, you know, are represented on college campuses more than men are. It's now more than 50-50. And then graduate schools. So that now we have a world where the highest levels of intellectual rigor are being offered to men and women alike. And therefore, for Torah to be meaningful, for Torah to be something that talks to the Jewish person, to every Jewish person, it has to be handled at the highest level. And this aside from the fact that traditionally self-motivated women were never included in the prohibition. If a woman felt a motivation to want to learn, that already it says in the Prisha on the bottom of Yerodea and Sim Reish Mem Vav, and we have ample a precedent for that. For self-motivated women showing that they are capable of learning Torah, to learn Torah at a very high level anyway. So this is where the divide happens in terms of, do we view the halacha as it appears in the Gemara as something that is kavua v'kaima, something that is set and cannot adapt based on a changing reality? Or do we view this halacha as, it's not a halacha that there's nisr for women to learn Torah, it's a halacha that Torah must always be learned properly. In a context where people who are uneducated will not be able to learn Torah properly, well then we don't encourage such Torah learning. But in a context where more people are educated and more people will be able to learn Torah properly, well then naturally that Torah is going to be something that is encouraged. That's a little bit, we obviously can't cover the entire topic right now, but that's a little bit of the basic Rashi Prakim, the basic ideas of Talmud Torah for women. I apologize for going a few minutes over time. Next week we'll do a different topic in Talmud Torah. I haven't decided what yet. If you have any suggestions, you can let me know. But something else relating to Talmud Torah. Have a great day and a great week, everyone.